sunset and evening star, and one clear call for me. And may there be no moaning of the bar when I put out to sea, but such a tide as moving seems asleep, too full for sound and foam, when that which drew from out the boundless deep turns again home, turns home. Twilight and evening bell, and after that the dark, and may there be no sadness of farewell when I embark. For though from out our bourne of time and place the flood may bear me far, I hope to see my pilot face to face when I have crossed the bar.
Welcome to another Bible study brought to you by the Hamilton Church of Christ. In 1 Corinthians 10, verse 21, you cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of devils. You cannot be partakers of the Lord's table and of the tables of devils. What the Apostle Paul is telling Christians here is that they cannot participate in true worship to God and false worship to anything other than God. That would be the cup of the devil or the table of the devil. So we have to be sure that our worship is correct, and not mingle or mix it with other worship that is not from God. We invite you to join us today as we study the Bible.
Have you made your preparation for a journey to the city on a train that's bound for glory by and by? Better get your reservation for the glorious vacation in that home prepared where we will never die. Well, 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 get on board, children. Get on board, I say, get on board, children. You better hurry, don't delay. This train is bound for glory. Don't carry nothing but the righteous and the holy. Get on board, children.
Children,
get on board today. In that home we'll live forever, on the banks beside the river, with my loved ones there who left this world below. God will be there with a welcome when we pull into the station. Have your ticket ready when it's time to go. Well, 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 get on board, children. Get on board, I say. Get on board, children. You better hurry, don't delay. This train is bound for glory. Don't carry nothing but the righteous and the holy. Get on board, children.
Children,
get on board today. Well, 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 get on board, children. Get on board, I say, get on board, children. You better hurry, don't delay. This train is bound for glory. Don't carry nothing but the righteous and the holy. Get on board, children.
Children,
get on board, children.
Children,
get on board, children.
Children,
get on board today.
Our study continues in the 19th chapter of Genesis, and in this portion of the book of Genesis, we're having the story of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah and those cities of the plain. We've already seen what a terrible, sinful state the city of Sodom was in, how that they tried to use these angels for homosexual purposes, and how Lot valiantly defended them, and finally the angels had to come to his aid with miraculous help by blinding those that were trying to cause the offense. But the city is going to be destroyed. The destruction is going to be within a matter of hours now. This is the middle of the night. And so in verse 12, And the men said unto Lot, Hast thou here any besides, son-in-law, and thy sons, and thy daughters, and whatsoever thou hast in the city? Bring them out of this place, for we will destroy this place, because the cry of them is waxing great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. So they told Lot, Get your relatives out of here. Alarm your sons-in-laws and your daughters and your family. If you have anybody here that you can tell that'll listen to you, get them out of this place. And so Lot went out, verse 14, and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters, and said, Up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. Even most of his own family wouldn't listen to Lot. They were so ingrained in the ways of Sodom, they just wouldn't believe that there was any danger here. They couldn't even make themselves know that there was going to be the judgment of God. And so they mocked, actually, Lot's attempt to rescue them. Verse 15 says, and that's where our lesson begins today, And when the morning arose, then the angels hastened Lot, saying, Arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters, which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city. So now it's early in the morning, when the seemed like it's about dawn of the day from the way we read this. Then the angels hastened Lot. They told Lot it's time to move now. They told Lot to arise and take thy wife and thy two daughters which are here. That's all that Lot had left of his family, his wife and two daughters. His other two sons and two daughters and their husbands, they refused to listen. So 6 of the 10 of his family were lost. But his wife and two daughters and himself, they were here. And so the angels told him to take them, and lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city. The city was ready for impending doom. God's judgment was going to rain down upon it. It was going to be destroyed, and everything in it would be destroyed. And so the only way to be saved was to get out of it, to leave it, to flee it. We're told in the Bible to flee such things as idolatry. But it seems that Lot was a little slow here. He wasn't all that real anxious to leave. So the angels hastened Lot. They had to give him a little shove here, make him get going, because Lot was wanting to tarry. And verse 16 says, And while he lingered, the men laid hold upon his hand, and upon the hand of his wife, and upon the hand of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful unto him, and they brought him forth and sent him without the city. So they actually took a hold of his hand and led him out. They did more than just urge him to go. They physically gave him some assistance in getting out of there. And this was actually the Lord being merciful unto him. You know, if we were left upon our own to get out of sin, we would never be able to do it. We have to have the Lord to help us, to urge us. First of all, the Lord has to tell us to get out of it. And we have to know what sin is. The Lord has to instruct us. And the second of all, then we have to have the urgency of our mind so that we act, so we do something. If we keep putting it off, if we keep waiting until a later time, it may be too late. In Lot's case, it would have been too late. There wasn't any time to waste. So the Lord was merciful. The angels took him, his wife, and his daughter by the hand and actually led them out of the city and set him forth and set him without the city. But now that they're out of the city, there's still more work to be done. Verse 17 says, And it came to pass, when they had brought them forth abroad, that he said, Escape for thy life. Look not behind thee, neither stay thou in all the plain. Escape to the mountain, lest thou be consumed. Now that they're out of the city, they really had more traveling to do. The angel tells them very plainly to escape for thy life. If you stay here, you're going to be consumed. You will not survive this. If you stay where the sinners are, you're going to die like the sinners die. That's what he's telling Lot. Your judgment's going to be like that of the sinners if you stay here. And so the message is very plain. A believer must flee the world, not looking back with regrets or longing, lest he himself be injured or destroyed in its overflow. And quite possibly, Lot or some of his family were lingering. Quite possibly his wife was lingering. And so they're told very plainly, Look not behind thee, neither stay thou in all the plain. Escape to the mountains, lest thou be consumed. But in verse 18, Lot said unto them, Oh, not so, my Lord. Here we see Lot making a complaint making a special request. He did not want to do exactly what the angels told him to do. He says, "Not so, my Lord." Verse 18, "Behold now, thy servant hath found grace in thy sight, and thou hast magnified thy mercy, which thou hast showed unto me in saving my life, and I cannot escape to the mountain, lest some evil take me and I die." So Lot is still trying to bargain with the deal. He's trying to make some other arrangement beside the one the angel recommended. He doesn't want to go to the mountain. He said, "I cannot escape to the mountain, lest some evil take me and I die." Now surely if God had taken him out of the city, and God had preserved him from the destruction of these five cities of the plain here, surely God could preserve him in the mountain. He could make a way for him to get to the mountain. If he took him by the hand and led him out of his house, they could get him to the mountain. But Lot didn't see it this way. He wants to hold back. He wants to bargain about this thing. He says, "I know that you've magnified your mercy. You've saved my life, but I can't go the full distance. I can't go to the mountain." And so verse 20 says, "Behold now, this city is near to flee unto, and it is a little one. Oh, let me escape thither. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live." So Lot picks out one of the five cities, the city of Zoar, the smallest one. The word Zoar means little one. And he says, "Let me go there. Let me go to this little city. It doesn't have as much wickedness as the others had. You can spare this city. I want to live in the city." So Lot insists that he wants to continue to have some of the comforts of city life rather than going to the mountain like the Lord actually wanted him to do so. And it is actually pitiful the way that Lot begs for the opportunity to continue to be at least somewhat comfortable in the world, stressing that Zoar was such a small city that it couldn't hurt too much to spare it. Also, it was not far distant, so the journey would not be nearly so hard as going to the mountains. Lot's carnal nature, in spite of his spirituality, kept manifesting itself at every turn. And in remarkable grace and long-suffering, through his angelic agent, God granted Lot this presumptuous request. He spared Zoar for Lot's sake, but all of this delay had wasted valuable time, and they needed to hasten. Possibly Lot's wife had been partially responsible for Lot's delaying tactics. She didn't want to leave in the first place, and no doubt would rather have moved to Zoar than to an unknown life in the mountains. As they rushed to Zoar, it is most likely that she still lagged behind, being resentful of having to leave her home and friends in Sodom. So the angel granted Lot his request to live in Zoar rather than to go to the mountain. Verse 21 said, "And he said unto him, See, I have accepted thee concerning this thing also, that I will not overthrow this city for the which thou hast spoken." So Zoar is going to be spared. He will not overthrow that city. The whole plan now of God is rearranged because of Lot's request. Instead of all the cities being destroyed and all the plain being destroyed, this little area where Zoar is going to be spared so Lot can go there and live. Verse 22 says, "Haste thee, escape thither, for I cannot do anything till thou be come thither. Therefore the name of the city was called Zoar." So he told him to hurry up and do what you're going to do. Don't waste any more time. We've already delayed long enough. We have work to do here. We have a judgment to bring upon these cities. And so go on to Zoar. We're going to spare Zoar. And the name of it means the little city. Now let's look for a few moments at some of the geological aspects of this region around the Dead Sea and what some of the archaeological findings have revealed. The Dead Sea is the lowest spot on the Earth's surface, being 1,286 feet below sea level. It is the only sea into which a river flows with no outlet. The Jordan River begins some 60 miles north out of the Sea of Galilee, and the Sea of Galilee is right at sea level. So as it descends down this Jordan River Valley, the river goes from sea level to 1,286 feet below sea level. This is the only place in the world where this is like this. And so the Jordan River empties into it, has no outlet, and so the water all has to evaporate out of there. There's no other way for the water to leave, and that leaves behind the great amount of salt from the river, and so the salt in the Dead Sea continues to increase. This Dead Sea is about 40 miles long by 10 miles wide. It's divided into two parts, which are connected by a narrow strait. The southern segment, about 10 miles long, is only about 10 to 20 feet deep, whereas the northern segment is very deep, up to 1,400 feet in places. It's possible that at the time of Abraham, the southern segment was the fertile plain, which seemed so attractive to Lot. It has since been submerged by water because of the silting up of the bed of the sea in the northern segment, causing the water level to rise. It is probable that this is what the verses in Genesis 14, verses 3, 8, and 10 speak of as the Vale of Siddim. Many archaeologists have believed that the five cities, except Zoar, which is apparently still in existence, called by the same name, were also on this plain, and that their remains are now covered by the waters of the Dead Sea. Yet, on the other hand, archaeological explorations within the past decade have shown that, at the time of Abraham, there were five large cities on the eastern side of this southern portion of the Dead Sea, which in many respects do seem to answer to the descriptions of the five cities of the plain. If these are indeed the cities of Lot's time, as now seems likely, then Sodom was the southernmost city, and as you move northward, there would be Gomorrah, Zoar, Admah, and Zeboim. Each city was located along one of the freshwater streams coming down from the eastern hills into the Vale of Siddim and on into the sea. Each was situated on a high outspur overlooking its wadi so that it could control the river and its water below. The five cities were apparently very prosperous and supported a very large population. The tombs that have been uncovered indicated that probably over 1 million individuals have been buried in them. The word Siddim seems to mean cultivated fields, and it indicates the extensive agricultural system developed on them by the Five Nation Confederacy. The heat and fertile soil, combined with reliable irrigation, made the whole region one of tremendous agricultural productivity. It was this that so attracted Lot that he chose to live there instead of on the western uplands with Abraham. The people in Sodom and the other four cities presumably worked the fields down in the plain during the day, then went back up to their much cooler homes during the evening. And so this may also have been one of the reasons that Lot wanted to stay at Zoar. He did not want to go to the mountains. He liked this region. And so he was willing to try to compromise even with his salvation to get to stay here. But the prosperity of this region, which is what so impressed Lot, was probably also the cause for the extreme wickedness of the cities. With all their material needs taken care of, with an abundance of leisure time, the people developed a moral laxity which soon became gross corruption until God finally could endure it no longer. As we note here again how that God yielded to Lot's weakness and did him a great favor and spared Zoar to gratify him, we must take note of the fact that his intercession for Zoar was not, as Abraham's was for Sodom, from a principle of generous charity, but it was merely from his own self-interest. Yet God granted him his request to show how much the fervent prayer of a righteous man avails. So Sodom's ruin was held off, it was suspended, till Lot was safe. The angel said, "I cannot do anything till thou shalt have come thither." So we see what care God takes for the preservation of his people, and how God bends over backwards, so to speak, to attend to their needs. Verse 23 says, "The sun was risen upon the earth when Lot entered into Zoar." So it was still very early in the day, and the destruction was scheduled to be early, no doubt. This destruction to be done before the workers left the cities to go into the fields, before any stranger would come into the city, they were to be taken early in the morning. Verses 24 and 25 say, "Then the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities, and all the plain, and all the inhabitants of the cities, and that which grew up from the ground." This destruction was a destruction that came from God. God was the immediate author of it. It was destruction from the Almighty. The Lord rained, And then it says, from the Lord, verse 24. That is God from himself, by his own immediate power, and it wasn't actually something just in the common course of nature, or God the Son from God the Father, for the Father has committed all judgment to the Son. And it is strange that this verse 24 says, then the Lord reigned, and then it says, from the Lord out of heaven. So it could be talking about God the Father and God the Son both working here in this destruction. There have been many attempts to explain this destruction of these cities from a natural standpoint. And it is true that this area does have a great fault here where earthquakes have occurred. And another earthquake could have occurred at this time. And it's possible that God triggered an earthquake along this great fault line at this time, which released and exposed to the atmosphere vast quantities of combustible hydrocarbons and sulfur. At the same time, God sent fire from heaven, which ignited the mixture in a great explosion and a devastating fire. And to Abraham, watching afar off with great concern ever since his intercessory prayer before the Lord, it seemed as though the smoke of the country went up as the smoke of a furnace. The fire and brimstone that fell from heaven could refer to the burning gas and sulfur that were blown into the air in the explosion and then fell back to the earth throughout the region. The most likely naturalistic explanation for the ignition of these materials probably be that of a simultaneous electrical storm, in which case the lightning itself could also be described as fire from heaven. And this has happened in other places in the Bible. And so this natural physical phenomena, divinely timed, could adequately explain the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. But we may want to interpret the story that way. But we do not want to exclude the possibility, however, that a specially created divine fire could have been sent supernaturally from heaven to ignite the region. The Bible does record other such things as in the days of Gideon, Judges 6 and 21, Elijah, 1 Kings 18:38, and others. It's interesting that the word for it in the New Testament is the Greek T-H-E-I, meaning let's fire. Personal connection and the two messengers with Sodom's destruction in itself tends to suggest that the rain of brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven was actually supernatural. There is certainly no reason for us to question either God's ability or the appropriateness of a true creative miracle in this situation. But it's enough for us to know that this destruction was brought about by God. Whatever means he chose to use doesn't change anything. The destruction came from God. It was a result of their wickedness in Sodom and these other cities. And God planned it, God timed it, and it happened at the command of God. Then in verse 26, we have the tragic story of Lot's wife. Verse 26 says, but his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. This is written for our admonition. Our Savior refers to it in Luke, the 17th chapter, where he says, remember Lot's wife. As by the example of Sodom, the wicked are warned to turn from their wickedness, so by the example of Lot's wife, the righteous are warned not to turn from their righteousness. In Ezekiel 3, verses 18 and 19, when I say unto the wicked, thou shalt surely die, and thou givest him not warning, nor speakest to warn the wicked from his wicked way, to save his life, the same wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at thine hand. Yet if thou warn the wicked, and he turn not from his wickedness, nor turn from his wicked way, he shall die in his iniquity, but thou hast delivered thy soul. The word here, look back, actually has the connotation of looking intently. It might possibly even be translated as lag back, or maybe even return back. It could be that she actually turned and started back toward the city of Sodom. But in any event, she disobeyed the command of the angel. The command was not to look back. She did look back, and so her sin was just the same as the sin of Adam and Eve, disobeying a direct positive command of God, showing disobedience. And disobedience then, of course, means that we're stepping out of the favor of God, stepping out of the realm of protection of God, and that's exactly what happened to Lot's wife. Today, those who are Christians have all renounced the world and the flesh and have set the faces heavenward. We as Christians are in the plain. We're now in a state of probation, and it is at our peril if we return back to the interest that we say that we've abandoned. Drawing back is to perdition, and looking back is going toward perdition. And we're reminded of this warning in Hebrews 4, verse 1, "Let us therefore fear, lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it." We have the promise, but we can still yet come short. We can look back, we can go back, and when we do, we're going back to our own destruction. That's our lesson. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.
Shine on for Jesus, shine brightly every day.
I'm telling you,
shine on for Jesus, he'll show you the way. Shine on for Jesus, through good times and bad. Shine on for Jesus, he's the best friend you ever had.
Well, when it seems your burdens are too much to bear, when you start believing that no one really cares, when you think you're suffering, it's nothing all but strife, just remember this, my friend, that Jesus gave his life.
Shine on for Jesus, shine brightly every day.
I'm telling you,
shine on for Jesus, he'll show you the way. Shine on for Jesus, through good times and bad. Shine on for Jesus, he's the best friend you ever had.
Well, if your heart is bolted shut, it needs to be set free. Jesus will unlock it, he holds the master key. So when you feel him tugging up on your heartstrings, let him in and worship Jesus, King of Kings.
Shine on for Jesus, shine brightly every day.
I'm telling you,
shine on for Jesus, he'll show you the way.
Yeah,
shine on for Jesus, through good times and bad. Shine on for Jesus, he's the best friend you ever had. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Every day I'll let my little light shine. Hide it under a bushel,
oh, no.
I'm gonna let it shine. Hide it under a bushel,
oh, no.
I'm gonna let it shine. Hide it under a bushel,
oh, no.
I'm gonna let it shine. Every day I'll let my little light shine. Jesus gave me the light, I'm gonna let it shine. Jesus gave me the light, I'm gonna let it shine. Jesus gave me the light, I'm gonna let it shine. Every day I'll let my little light shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Every day I'll let my little light shine. Shine on, shine on, shine on, shine on.
Let your light shine on.
Let us see, let us understand, so that we can be converted and God will heal. We close our lesson at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.
Many days begin with sunshine, skies are clear and also blue. Then the dark clouds gather round us, hiding sun and sky from view. If we start to sing of glory, lift our voices in his praise. He has promised strength to lift us up, spirits of our heart to raise. All our dark clouds have silver lining, when to go and we sing a song. When our day has started standing, and it rains, we can go on. We can smile and the sun is shining, let the voice is in his praise. All our dark clouds and we soon have silver linings every day. Does your heart at times seem broken, from your eyes the tears do flow?
near the ones you count as true friends seem to vanish like the soul. Just remember there is someone up in heaven looking down. He will never leave, never will deceive, and for you he has a crown. All our dark love, the silver lining, when to go, I would sing a song. When I beg, as strong as weather, and it seems we can go on. We just smile as I'm singing, let go.